Busted appliance? This is your sign to upgrade. Shop at Lowe's to get up to 35% off and next day delivery on hundreds of major appliances. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 3/18 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Order by 4 p.m. Available Monday through Saturday. Subject to availability. Fees, exclusions, and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/appliance delivery for more details.
Visit your nearby Lowe's on Silver Drive in Columbus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Today on The Grave Talks, who is the ghost in the trench coat? A conversation with Sean Bowman. It all started with a strange man standing in the basement wearing a trench coat. It wasn't a family member. It wasn't a friend. It wasn't even living. It was, however, the first paranormal experience for Sean Bowman. First experience of many that would lead to a life that involves seeking out answers to the paranormal questions that plague all of us. What happened when Sean investigated a location? Another investigator came under possession. We ask that and many more questions today on The Grave Talks.
Probably when I had my first experience, which was when I was a child, I'd say probably like 4 or 5, I'd say, because we moved into a new house when I was 4 years old, and me and my brother both saw a guy in the hallway in a trench coat. And the way my house was set up, like, you came in and there was a hallway, and then, like, if you went straight, you went into the kitchen. There was like a little corridor there, and to the right there was a doorway, and to the left was a dining room. We were in the dining room building with mini bricks, and my brother's 6 years older than me. And like I said, I was probably about 4 or 5, because it was shortly after we moved into this house. But we were building with mini bricks, and in front of the doorway, we saw this guy in a trench coat just standing there looking at us. And, you know, we both like freaked out, and my dad was in the living room. Went to my dad, told my dad. My dad, like, looked through the house, looked everywhere, you know, looked down the basement and couldn't find anything. And the funny thing is, years down the line, when I was an adult, I saw a psychic, and she brought something up about being there was a spirit in our basement. So that, I think that kind of like ties into each other, you know?
So you saw the guy, was it like, describe it, was it clear as day, just like some intruder is hanging out in your basement in a trench coat? Or did it look, you know, transparent, shadow like? How would you describe its visuals?
I mean, I was definitely a solid person as far as I can remember. Like I said, this is a while ago. I'm 41 now. So that I can remember, it was a solid person. And like I said, my brother was 6 years older than me, so he was a little bit more, you know, older. And he still remembers it to this day, too. So, but yeah, it was a solid person, is what it looked like.
What was your, like, emotional reaction to the guy standing in your basement with a trench coat?
I mean, I freaked out, I guess. Like, I wasn't used to seeing something like that, that's for sure.
I can imagine. I mean, it's what immediately goes to my mind, and I'm gonna what I'm thinking of back in the 80s, think of television, think of spooky shows. Where was the trench coat? Who was wearing the trench coat? Thoughts?
I mean it would have been in the 80s, because it would have been late 80s. Like, you mean like a describe, kind of remind me like the Gordon fisherman guy, kind of, I guess.
Oh, the fisherman. Okay.
Yeah. If I had to like describe what the actual person looked like, it's, I'd say something like that.
Special moment here on the program. I've summoned the man. He's here to tell you what's going on. Take a listen.
It was me, Robert Stack. I was looking to film a new episode of Unsolved Mysteries.
There you go. That's all it was. It was Robert Stack. We have a voice generator of Robert Stack. So
that's awesome.
I was thinking like, oh my gosh, that makes me think of that. So you have this moment of seeing the guy in the basement. Your brother saw it as well. Did you guys talk about it? What was kind of the attitude around the house and the atmosphere?
Yeah, like I said, we both talked about it. We said something to my dad. I'm guessing eventually we told my mom because I don't remember her being there, but she had to be in the house, I guess. Yeah, I mean, like I said, it freaked us out. There was other things that happened at that house too, like later on in life. And I actually lived in that house probably about 20, 25 years. Like eventually my parents moved out and I lived in that house by myself. And I wouldn't say it was as common when I got older, but I still saw stuff. Like there was stuff out of the side of my eye, or I remember like being in my bedroom and I saw like a black shadow. When I was a kid, I thought I saw a family at the foot of my bed. We used to hear stuff up in the attic.
Let's identify some of these things a little bit more in detail, because these are like life-changing moments for anyone. And you've had so many of them, you can just kind of brush them over. It's like, yep, family at the end of the bed, you know, no big deal. There's a spider in the corner. So tell me about some of these other experiences you had later in life. Tell me some of them that really did stand out to you, you know, more than others, that really, you know, more than it piqued your interest, obviously, but you know, had gave you an emotional reaction.
Like I said, some of the stuff I remember is a family being at the end of my bed. I was a kid at that time, and that was in I had my own bedroom. When I was older, I ended up moving to my parents' bedroom, which was a bigger bedroom. So I was in my kid bedroom. Mm-hmm. And at the foot of my bed, like I woke up in the middle of the night and there was like a family standing at the foot of my bed. And I don't know, you know, now as an adult, I think, you know, could have been just waking up out of a dream and maybe, you know, that's what it was. But as a kid, like it always stuck with me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it's those moments. Do you think, because you go to the dream idea impossibility, mm-hmm. when you were a kid and you were having some of these moments, did you go there often? Did you go there and it was a dream? It was a dream more so in just kind of a coping mechanism to process what was actually happening?
Probably. I mean, I've always grown up, you know, with like even horror in general. Like I've loved horror movies and, you know, used to watch like Child's Play and Exorcist and stuff like that. So maybe, you know, I thought it could be my imagination.
Mm-hmm. But deep down, you knew that there was something going on in that house. Was it ever, I mean, obviously you stayed there for quite some time, including when your parents moved out. So was there ever a feeling of uncomfortable, or was it more of a, you know, you're cohabitating and everybody's cool?
I think as an adult and when I was by myself, it was more cohabitating and everybody was cool. Like maybe I was more scared when I was younger, but I don't know. Even like now, like doing paranormal investigations, like I'm not very scared of anything, not to sound like cocky or anything. Sure. It's just like I'm like used to it and like it doesn't really bother me, you know?
Tell me about that a little bit. I mean, even someone who does have has been accustomed to paranormal things throughout their lives, there's still moments, there's still times where, you know, sometimes there's fear. Why do you think it is for you that doesn't register as strong as it may for someone else?
I think just growing up around it and just like being used to it. And I don't know, I've always been somebody who's like to explore, even if it's by myself. Like, you know, I'd go out and like even when I used to go to high school, I had to walk through the woods to get to high school. Mm-hmm. And I live in Pittsburgh with like daylight savings time and that sometimes during the morning, you know, it'd still be dark out. So you're walking through the woods by yourself in the dark. And like I just grew up like that's normal to me, you know.
Mm-hmm. I know what it was. It was the 80s and you were wearing a no fear T-shirt. So that immediately made it completely okay.
Exactly.
Half the audience knows what I'm talking about, the other half is like, I think I saw that at a Goodwill once. So you live in this house for a while. Tell me more about how life progresses and experiences progress, and did you have other experiences personally prior to wanting to dig into this deeper as an investigator?
Like I said, there was a couple other things that happened at that house. My even not just with me, like I remember my mom said like when she lived there, that she thought she saw somebody. She actually thought when it was one of my friends, she was like, why was his, I'll go by his nickname. I won't tell you his real name, but Beans. She was like, why was Beans walking around in our house? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, he wasn't in our house. It was like 3 a.m. or something. Why would he be walking around in our house? You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But she thought that he would, I mean, when your mom had the thought that your friend was there at 3 a.m, is that a plausible idea that you would have friends over that late?
Yeah, occasionally. But I mean, okay. At the time, like he wasn't there. And I don't even think he's ever slept there at my house, honestly. Like I've had other friends sleep there, but I don't think because I was probably, I'd say probably a teenager, maybe early 20s, but probably a teenager I think at the time.
But because it was somewhat plausible, she just kind of brushed it off like, you know, it's a late night. They're hanging out. It wasn't get out of bed. What the hell's going on?
Well, she was kind of like offended because like she thought he was like creeping by her bedroom. You know, so it was kind of weird. But like,
yeah.
Like, why would he be doing that?
I saw Beans in my room last night with a camera. What was that all about? Yeah. Like, no, he wasn't here. That's wow. So did your mom have an acceptance of this, that these things were going on? What was her mindset of it at the time?
Well, she definitely was into paranormal and stuff like that. I mean, my mom passed away in 2018. Mm-hmm. So like, I wasn't like as deep into it as I am now. Mm-hmm. But she always was into the paranormal. My dad was more like the history type of person. That's why like some way, like, you know, like Gettysburg, like my dad would love the history side, my mom would love the paranormal side, you know?
Sure. Did you ever get a chance to have like in-depth conversations about all the stuff that you experienced there?
Yeah. I mean, I've talked to other people. Some people, you know, like my wife obviously knows about a lot of stuff that happened. Some of my friends and everything. And
I mean, even more with your mom. I mean, more with your mom.
With my mom. She only said that about that one experience. She knew about the thing with the trench coat with me and my brother. Mm-hmm. And like I said, we've talked about like I've seen somebody on the steps before.
Yeah.
And just like little things over there. Like I said, I lived there 25 years. So there wasn't like a ton of stuff happening. Like this is over a 25 year span. And I think it was more active when I was a kid than when I was an adult. But there was a couple things that still happened.
What do you think that is sometimes that hauntings get more active at certain points in time? Sometimes it's when there's children around. Sometimes it's when a specific person is around, regardless of age. When you look back on your situation, why do you think there was a time where it seemed to peak more than others?
Well, I kind of think maybe it had something to do with like remodeling the house. Cause I know like when we got the house was over 100 years old. It was the oldest house on the block. It's still there too. But, it was like an old farmhouse. Mm-hmm. But when we first moved in, you know, like we replaced the windows and did stuff with the bathroom and this and that. And, you know, by the time I was living there, like towards the end, it was starting to fall down, actually, because I didn't have the money to fix it. Okay. So, like, maybe that's why, you know, it wasn't as active as we all wasn't really messing with it, you know?
Sure. You think it had to have something to do with kind of disturbing the property? And tell me about your thoughts on that. I mean, just, you know, being an investigator, having, you know, experienced and seen and heard more stories beyond your own now from people's very personal, you know, aspects. Do you find that more frequent? I mean, obviously, it's kind of a cliche where it's like, well, are you working on the house? Well, that's why it's happening. What are your thoughts on that concept in general of that stirring things up?
Well, I definitely think it's possible. I mean, if you think about it like this way, like if this was your house and you grew up with it a certain way, like you'd want it kept that way. And it's even like, I know there's a property in Washington County that just sold recently, but it was like a big old mansion, and the big rumor was, you know, it was the big old haunted house, and like anytime somebody came in, like they would try working on it and they'd leave their lifts there and leave their tools there because like people didn't want, you know, disturbing their property.
Is there ever a way to please spirits with disturbing the property, like more so, okay, we're gonna restore this to what it was when you were alive versus we're gonna make it a modern farmhouse with tons of shiplap?
Yeah, I would think so. Like if you brought it back to maybe its glory, I guess, instead of just like putting, you know, I don't know, TVs HGTV, on the wall and stuff like that, and more modern stuff, you know?
Yeah, it's like, we're going to turn this into an HGTV home. I think the ghosts are like, no, please don't. Interesting. So tell me more about your life as things progressed after that.
Well, I've had a couple other experiences in different properties over the years. And then actually, I'd say I probably got more involved with the paranormal after my parents passed. My dad died in 2011. And then, like I said, my mom, 2018. One of the things I remember back when my dad passed is we went to a Girl Scout camp. It was in Gettysburg, actually. And as we were coming back, and I don't know how many people, and I don't even know if I really believe in like the apps on the phones or whatever, but I was using like a ghost app on the phone.
Sure.
And one of the things, like we were talking about my dad at the time, me and my kids, and I think my girlfriend at the time was with us too. But we were talking about my dad at the time, and we're like, you know, asking the app questions. And the app said Bubba, which is what my kids used to call my dad.
Yeah,
so that's really like how, like, I could see the app like saying like house or something stupid, like, but how would that app know that that was what my kids called my dad, you know?
Yeah. No, I think that that's very interesting when it comes to some of the apps. I didn't know what to think of them much either. And I don't do a ton of investigating. Me and my daughter go out every now and then and do a little stuff for some of our social media. But we have a bunch of equipment that we'll take with us just to do it. But honestly, yeah, one of the things that I have found to be the most intriguing is an app that I have on my phone that acts kind of like an obelisk. And I did research. I asked around, you know, this community of people, because I've talked to thousands of people now over the last 10 years. And it's like, what, if anything, because it's a very mixed bag, it seems, with people's opinions on the apps. But if anything, do you recommend? Is there any apps that you think are a little more legit than others? And they forwarded me to this one. I'm like, okay, let's try this. And it acts like an obelisk. And it really has been crazily accurate for me in ways like Bubba, like you just talked about, where we'll be going through. I think one of the most intriguing ones that I had was over Thanksgiving. Me and my daughter were walking around the cemetery that I used to play in, because, yes, I played in cemeteries as a child, not the playground. And we were walking around, and she had a K2 meter in her hand, and I was walking next to her. It's just snowy day right before Thanksgiving, and I said, okay, you know, if there's anyone here, and I was trying to direct them to try and light up the meter, I said there, and I was speaking, you know, sometimes in baby terms, you know, that thing in her hand, that thing over there, if you go close to it, that may help it light up, so please, you know, try and go over there by that and by the thing in her hand. And the thing spells out meter. Just I'm just saying every word but meter, even though it's the meter. It's like, you mean like the meter? I'm like, yes, exactly. You know what I'm talking about. But I mean, it's bizarre. And I find it in some places it's hotter than others. And I don't know. I'm just amazed by some of the seemingly sensible reactions that I've received. I know you said you don't know how much you believe in apps like that. But you get kind of get things like that. What are your opinions on apps versus, you know, a piece of equipment like an obelisk that is made strictly for, trying to communicate?
I think, it's more, you know, it's a piece of electrical equipment. Like, why couldn't they manipulate that if they can manipulate the other? You know, I know like Mikey, who's another guy in my group, he's completely against apps. We always, you know, I always give him a hard time about them. But I don't know. There's, like I said, that the Bubba thing. I'm trying to think. There was another time when we had two different pieces of equipment running. I think one might have actually been an obelisk. And we heard like, or no. It was a spirit box, because we heard a meow on the spirit box. And then the app said cat. So that was at the same time. So when you have something that, like, you know,
yeah,
can back up what it's saying, that I think it's kind of relevant. I'm not saying they always work, because nine times out of 10, you get a lot of BS on them, but
sure,
I think that was like legit, you know?
No. Yeah. Especially when you can have two things kind of correlate in their own way. Sometimes it's like, well, it could be a coincidence, but I mean, some things that you're like sitting here doing this, like, what are the odds, you know, that it would be that much of a coincidence? So let me ask you this. You said you got into the paranormal investigating a little bit after your parents had passed. Did your parents' passing have anything to do with your, you know, renewed interest or questioning or just, you know, investigating of the other side once people pass?
I never actually have ever tried contacting them, but I think that's kind of like in the back of my mind is like why I started doing it, you know. Like I said, with the thing with my dad and the Bubba thing, and then just like other little things that would happen. Like we'd always see this yellow bird that would come to my window, and we'd always like thought it was my dad. Cause you know, like there's like different signs with animals and stuff like that, that represent your family. And just like other stuff too. Like if something would like fall off the shelf or something that was related to like had something to do with my mom or my dad. Like it just, I don't know, I guess like renewed that interest, I guess.
Sure. What would you ask your parents if they were around today about growing up in the house? If you could ask them anything about, you know, their experiences or something that you would have liked to have known, what would you have asked them?
I probably would have found out more in detail, like what my mom saw, or if there was more experiences other than what she was telling me. I don't think my dad, even if my dad would have saw something. Well, actually my dad, he went blind when I was in high school, mm-hmm. but like previously he could see.
Yeah.
But even if he did see something or sense something, he was the type, I don't think he wouldn't have said anything. I don't think.
Would he just kept it to himself?
Yeah. Like I don't think he would believe it even if he saw it, you know?
Yes, I understand. I have a father just like that, where it's like, does not believe in ghosts whatsoever. My mom does. And it's like, it could hit him in the head and he'd be like, yeah, it was a robin that flew into the house. Like, Dad, there's never been a robin. Well, it happened. You know, that's what it was. And got kind of defensive anytime. It's like, it kind of teeters on the area of having to admit, maybe there's something else going on here. So you said you had the experience with the animals, and that's interesting to me because we get so many stories, especially on our other program, Real Ghost Stories Online, from listeners having experiences that match up with an animal, whether, you know, cardinal is the very common one, but you know, it can be almost anything. Seeing pennies, seeing dimes, seeing this, doing that, as almost, you know, signs from the other side, and they seem to show up at fairly pivotal moments. It's not always just random. In my life, it feels kind of random because I have this pack of cardinals that live in a couple trees out behind my house. So it's not. If that's the case, if it's always cardinals and they're dead people, then I have like my entire extended family living in a tree out back. But I don't think it's that because they're always shitting on my mirrors of my car. So maybe they really disliked me. I don't know. But when it comes to animals, I do believe there's something there to that. What's your thought on that with the idea of it being a symbol, of it being them? Where do you weigh in on that when someone has those moments of an animal that just seem to match up with it being a representation of someone who passed?
Well, I mean, I don't know. I think it's kind of weird. Like even actually currently right now, there's a pair of doves that always come to they come to our house after the wintertime, which is still kind of cold here. It's supposed to be warm today, but there's these two doves that always come to our porch. And the ones we actually built them like a nest last year. And I don't know if it's the same ones or not, but they always come back every year. So like even like stuff with that, but like with my dad, with the bird, it was always this yellow bird. And like it would come to the window, it would peck at the window. This was when my mom was still alive too. So my mom, you know, my mom thought it had something to do with my dad too. But just like, I don't know, those are the only really experiences with animals with me.
Yeah. And I guess it's obviously, it's all opinion based. What do you feel that is when it is an animal doing that? Is it the spirit? Is it the soul of the person who passed that's part of that animal? Is the animal more so just a symbol or a sign that a greater power, or maybe even them, are sending to you? Obviously, there's no right or wrong answer. I'm just curious what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if I had to think about it, I would think it's maybe them checking in on you, I guess.
Mm-hmm. checking in terms of, are they using, are they in the animal? Are they in that bird? Are they seeing through those bird's eyes?
Yeah, I would say something like that. Like,
okay.
They'd be able to, yeah.
So, I mean, in a way, it's almost like they're, are they always that bird? Or are they just possessing the bird temporarily to show up?
Probably temporarily, because I think they could show up in other forms too.
Do you think, this is an interesting thought, do you think when birds continually fly into windows over and over and over, that it's not necessarily because the bird otherwise wouldn't be doing that. Is that like, you know, like an adult grabbing the controller of the PlayStation and trying to play some current game that you've never touched? And you're like running into shit left and right because you don't know what you're doing. Is that kind of the same sort of concept, I wonder, where, why does this bird keep running into the window? It's like, oh, because it's possessed by Uncle Larry and Larry doesn't know how to fly. You know,
probably just a bird, just stupid bird.
Yeah, just honestly. A dumb bird. Yeah. It's not Uncle Larry being a dumbass. It's just,
he's like looking at his reflection and doesn't know what the hell it is.
It's just a stupid bird. I've always kind of wondered about that, because sometimes it's like, why do you keep doing this? Like, stop. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's been a wonder. So tell me, how did you get into the world of investigating? What kind of, you know, brought you there?
Well, originally I was part of a group called Celestial Oddities Paraseekers, and it was me and this other guy. I used to actually rap. I did rap music, and he used to do rap music. And one day, like on Facebook or something, he was talking about, you know, starting his own group up or whatever. So I messaged him, and originally it was me and him. We brought in a couple different people. Like, I brought in my wife. He brought in his best friend, which is Mikey, who's the other guy that's in our group still. And then there was two other guys that were part of another group called PPI, Pittsburgh Paranormal Investigators. So it was us six originally, or yeah, one, two, three, four. Yeah, us six originally. And then after like a year we were together, we kind of wanted to go a different way. He was nothing against anybody that's into the occult or whatever, but mm-hmm. he was pretty deep into the occult.
Okay.
And that wasn't kind of what, you know, me and my wife were wanting to do. So we started our own group. It was us two, and then Mikey, and then the other two were in our group. And then we added Mikey's wife, and then Phil and April. And then actually the other two from PPI ended up leaving. So now it's just us six, but now we're bumping the Night Society, and we have been for the last couple of years or whatever.
So tell me more about, he was deep into the occult. I mean, what were some of the things that kind of made you say, I'm not really comfortable with this?
He was like a Luciferian, Satanism, which, like I said, I mean, if that's what you want to do, that's what you want to do, but
sure,
that's not who I am. I was raised Catholic. Wouldn't say I'm religious or anything, but I believe in God and everything. There's just some of this stuff, like he would do like ceremonial stuff and just stuff I didn't want no part of.
Yeah, I mean, that seems like it would be a very toxic mix to be into that and then trying to investigate it. Almost, my take on it would be that that's no longer investigating, that's more so conjuring.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's even like some of the places we would go to, like one of the places we go to a lot, actually, the Bel Air House is known to be, it used to be called the Bel Air Demon House, which the owner doesn't want to call that anymore because, you know, the stigma of the property.
Yeah.
But he would go there and he would set up his little ceremonial mats and do this and that. And he would do like bloodletting and stuff like that. And the thing is, he wouldn't even ask us. Like, we'd be at the table and he would start doing this shit. And it's like, I'm not cool with that, you know?
Did you ever have any uncomfortable experiences other than visually watching your friend do these sort of things while investigating, while he was doing these things?
Well, the time we were at Bel Air, I'm not saying he's the one that caused this, but we're pretty sure we saw a possession, and it probably didn't help that we were, well, I wouldn't say we, because I wasn't really messing with that, but that he was messing with that type of stuff.
Did he become possessed? Did someone else become possessed?
It was somebody else in our group who actually wasn't part of our group. It was that Pittsburgh Paranormal Investigators. There was other members previously, and it was a member from their group.
So what, walk me through that. What, how did that start? What happened?
We were there for two nights. And the first night, I don't want to use his name, but
yeah, sure.
We'll just, I don't know, we'll call him Joe.
Okay, yeah, that works.
So me and Joe were talking, and the first night, you know, we're like, because nothing really happened, and we're like, oh, we don't know if his property's haunted, nothing's been going on. So then, like, the next day, like, he was using a pendulum, and I don't know if that opened him up to something or not, but he was saying, you know, like, use my body, use my energy, like stuff he shouldn't be saying.
Mm-hmm.
And later on in that night, we were doing a channeling session, and he was, Joe or whatever, was on the couch behind me. I'm not going to use the other guy's name either.
That's fine.
Behind Bob, we'll say. So he's behind Bob, and he, you know, Bob has his headphones on, he has his I think he had a blindfold on, so he doesn't really know what's going on.
Yeah,
he's, and Joe started like crying, and like hysterically crying, and there was I'm trying to think how many people there. I mean, I think you have up to 10 people, so there was probably around that, I don't remember exactly the number, but the rest of us are all in the room doing this too, and like, we're seeing what's going on, we're seeing that, you know, Joe's crying behind him. And so like, we hit the other guy and we're like, you know, like, see what's going on, you know, just to turn around. And so we ended up getting him out of the room. We went outside, me and April, who's part of my group, actually, like, we're holding his hand outside and like trying to talk to him. And he was just like laughing. And like, at one of the things with the house is that there was supposed to be Underground Railroad, and there's supposed to be slaves and everything there. And he was like humming, like, it sounded like some type of like old type of,
yeah,
slave tune or something, you know.
Yeah.
And it was very out of character, like he wouldn't respond to any of us. We had one lady in our group come out and tried to like sage him, and he was just like laughing at her. We brought him back in, and the guy that's deep in the occult, Bob, will say,
yeah,
he started to do a ceremony at the table there. And one thing is, I will say, like, this guy is super knowledgeable about shit. He knows his stuff. Like, he, I think stuff does react to him.
Yeah.
And
he's not just a weekend Satanist. He's a Satanist, yeah, full time.
Like, he's actually kind of known. That's kind of why I don't want to mention his,
okay,
name.
Sure.
But so like, we go to the table, we do, I guess, a seance, like we hold hands and everything. And he's doing his little ceremony, and he's, you know, praying to different archangels and everything. And like I said, I don't know a whole lot about that stuff, but he was doing his thing or whatever.
Yeah.
So there's like candles in the middle of the table. There's like a couple little ones, just really big one in the middle. And the big one in the middle keeps like flickering and flickering and flickering. Eventually blows out. As we're holding his hand, because like I said, me and April are on both sides of this guy.
Yeah.
We both heard "Get out" come from behind him. And also, as this was going on, he keeps saying, because one of the things at the Bel Air House, there's supposed to be this Emily Davis, who's supposed to be a little girl. And he keeps saying, "It's not a little girl. It's not a little girl. It's not a little girl." And then like, he kept talking about like where it was. He was like, "It's coming up the steps. Like, I can see it right now. It's coming." And the funny thing is, like, I've actually was just at the Bel Air House on Friday again, because me and my wife were there for a couple hours because we met some other team.
Yeah.
And so I was like, you know, reading up on some of the history again recently. And one of the things I saw from somebody that like reviewed the place is they saw this black shadow, like by the kitchen, by the kind of like, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, it's weird because going back to where I grew up, like the kitchen with the basement and everything, and me seeing something like they saw it by this doorway by the basement, like kind of similar to what I experienced as a kid.
Yeah.
Which I just thought of that right now. But
yeah.
Anyway, so like, he was seeing this. Other people have seen stuff in that same thing. And like I said, I don't want to use his real name.
Yeah.
But if you go off the property, he has the same name as somebody at the property, and his middle name is somebody at the property. And they say, like, you know, that it'll attract the people that have like the same name, which is weird. Like, I'm not saying all haunted properties do that, but
sure.
I'm saying this house like claims that, you know?
Weird synchronicity. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, all this is going on. After he did his ceremony, everything seemed to be normal. The two of the guys are from PPI, actually, like, it's a father and son, and he wanted his son to like go up in the attic, because they say the attic's like the, you know, the worst part in the house. Mm-hmm. At least in this house. And yeah. He's wanting him to go up there and confront it. And like, I don't know, he was like, the son was like, yeah, I'm not doing it. Like, he was scared, you know, like we were all scared. You could tell, like, if you looked around the table, we were all scared. Like, this wasn't normal, you know?
Yeah.
It was the only time I've ever been scared on an investigation to this day. And the thing is too, is like, my wife wasn't with us at the time. It was, you know, the rest of the group, and she was, I don't know, she didn't come. I think she didn't come actually because she knew it was supposed to be demonic, and this was, you know, she didn't want to go on a demonic thing.
Yeah.
But I remember like calling her after this happened, like 2 or 3 in the morning. And I called her because I had to go to the bathroom, and I was like, yeah, I don't want to go to the bathroom by myself. So I'm going to talk to you while I go to the bathroom.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was definitely, it was scary. We have a little documentary on YouTube. It's Possessed and Oppressed in a Town Called Bel Air on our Bumping the Night Society page.
Okay.
And we all go in depth talking about it. And we don't have actually the possession on film, just because when that guy did the ceremony, he didn't want anything filmed.
Why do you think that is? Why is it that sometimes people who are doing things like that, they don't want the filming of it?
Well, I think his was more like, you know, like secretive, like he doesn't want people to know what his ritual is or what he's doing. I don't know the whole.
They don't want to learn his secret recipe.
Yeah. And I don't know the whole like rules with Satanism or Luciferianism or any of that stuff. So I'm not sure if that had something to do with that too. Like, I don't know if he could get in trouble for doing that type of stuff or how that works.
That's going to wrap up part one of our conversation with Sean. In part two, what was Sean feeling as his friend appeared to become possessed during an investigation? Does Sean think he's been followed by anything supernatural? What happened at a haunted castle in Ohio when Sean investigated it? And can structures architecture invite paranormal activity simply by the way that they are formed and the feelings that we get out of it? To hear that and all of our interviews in their entirety, hundreds of them to binge away on right now, simply go to patreon.com/thegravetalks or thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper. $5 a month gets you access to all of those pieces of content, hundreds of them, for you to binge away on, all commercial free. patreon.com/thegravetalks or thegravetalks.com and click Become a Gravekeeper. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.
Are you a fraud-paying American? It's a fact that 1 in 4 honest, hard-working, tax-paying Americans has been a victim of identity theft. With LifeLock Identity Theft Protection, though, if your identity is stolen, they fix it, guaranteed, and get you your money back. Last year, the IRS flagged over $16 billion in refunds for identity fraud. That's billions of dollars that could come from your salary, overtime, or second job. But this year, you don't need to stay a victim. LifeLock monitors millions of data points per second for your personal information and alerts you to threats you could easily miss on your own. And if your information does fall into the wrong hands, only LifeLock has U.S.-based restoration specialists who are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package. Because this tax season, fraud-paying American is something no American should have to claim. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart and save up to 40% your first year. That's 40% off at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell, and when I spend 200 days a year rolling down the highway, the bus can start to feel smaller than a guitar case. Everyone wonders how I stay chill while the hours crawl by. Truth is, one good luck spent on Chumba, and suddenly the trip feels a whole lot shorter. Finding your space, even when there isn't much to spare. Need some chill? Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus T&Cs apply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Are you a fraud-paying American? One in four tax-paying Americans has been a victim of identity fraud. With LifeLock, if your identity is stolen, they fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Last year, billions in refunds were stolen. Could be from your salary, overtime, or second job. Gone. But this year, you don't need to stay a victim. Because this tax season, fraud-paying American is something no American should have to claim. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.